Frank, if you want to pick up where we left off.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Next one, Karen, will be number two. Anticipating the outcome of that vote, the committee has another motion, which is, in the event that the council not consider an amendment for the any form of LAPP, that the December 31st, 2006 date be established for the qualification for allocation history in Area 1. That's a committee motion.
Committee motion does not require a second discussion.
I can't. Lori earlier, I think, went into all the reasons on why that day was chosen, because that's when the regulations, things changed up in Area 1. So that's why the committee went with that date.
Go ahead, Lori.
I'm not entirely clear on what passing this motion would mean. It's not formally a control date, because a control date is a future date. So my assumption is, I'm not sure there's actually like a legal date. My assumption is that if this motion passes, it's just in the record that this would be the council's intent. I guess it's like a form. I don't know how if this actually binds us to anything in the future.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think it would be a binding decision the way it's stated, but open it up to the council. Anyone on the council want to improve the amendment or the motion to clarify that? Dave Gaethel.
Actually, I had a question. I think it might be for George. There are still people under appeal of denial of a 1A permit. When does that appeal process end? When will we know what the universe of participants is?
We don't have a date. We're working through the remaining appeals, and I can't tell you when that will be completed. But I have the same question about what this is or what it means. I doubt it has any legal standing at all. That would be for Gene to answer, but I'm not sure what this does.
Well, that would be my follow-up, is that until we know the universe of participants, we can't figure out how to deal with this particular issue. I mean, the date may be fine, it may not be, I don't know. But, I mean, it could have as a scenario, let's say there's somebody that's currently doesn't have a permit in 1A, he wins his appeal, but he wins his appeal after 2006, obviously. What kind of situation are they in then? So I don't know where to go with this.
Paul Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Was there any discussion on the committee about how this complicates the fact that we may have different qualification criteria for Areas 2, and then someone might say, I want different qualification for Area 3. And if we only do allocation based on a date for Area 1, then potentially all the history being developed in 2 and 3 by maybe macro vessels or something like that would increase their quota allocation. And we already have limited entry that we know has the capacity to catch the whole resource. So I think it's problematic to just say we're going to allocate in one area, with quota allocation, and not do it all at once, because it creates real complications down the line for the limited entry vessels.
Anyone else on the council? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Anything further? Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this date has some significance for a number of participants in the fishery due to the implementation of Amendment 1 and what that has meant to individual companies and vessels. However, I also think that considering our last vote, it's not likely that we're going to be moving anything in the very near future to allocate. And I would assume that the council would have to consider a range of alternatives if we were to move forward. So I think that any range would need to include this date, and I don't see any problem with moving this forward.
Anything further? You ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Four. Opposed? Eleven. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion fails, 4-11. Frank?
Okay. As Laurie mentioned earlier, we had a pretty good presentation on the river herring and where they were caught, and it seemed to be pretty isolated areas. So with that, the council came up with the motion, which is number 3, that the council request the herring PDT craft alternatives for time area closures to protect southern New England and Massachusetts runs of river herring. And that was a committee motion. And it was further interpreted to mean that by southern New England, Massachusetts, it also meant the areas off of Cape Cod.
Committee motion does not require a second. Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to amend the motion that the council requests that the herring PDT, in conjunction with herring industry participants, craft alternatives for time area closures to protect the southern New England mid-Atlantic runs of river herring.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Simpson. Discussion? Mary Beth?
The reason that I use that language is that our current advisory panel for herring does not include any captains on the water who are actually operating in the fishery. And I think that we all acknowledge that the herring fishery does have bycatch of river herring and always has for as long as I've been involved in it, for 25 years. And that to craft alternatives for time area closures, we really need the input from those people that are on the water.
Dr. Pierce.
I'm glad that Mary Beth made this motion to amend. I think it makes a great deal of sense. I'm also quite pleased that the Herring Committee felt it was worthwhile to actually delve into this issue in a deeper way and to offer up to this council this course of action. It makes a great deal of sense. And we all have copies of that report produced by Matt Seary, as well as Gary Nelson and Michael Armstrong of my staff, Division of Marine Fisheries. A good deal of work has been put into this issue, that is to try to define where river herring bycatch occurs and in what amounts and in what fishery, what time of the year. Very complicated matter. Nevertheless, it's an extremely important issue. And I know right now that there are some sea herring captains, Midwater Trawlers specifically, working in conjunction with the plants. I know that they have voluntarily stayed out of certain areas at certain times to minimize the possibility of there actually being significant bycatches of river herring. And that would be notably in the area of Block Island Sound, Rhode Island Sound. So there are areas where I suspect the plant development team, working with the sea herring area participants, as the motion reads, that they will be able to come up with some suggestions as to where there actually should be some time area closures to reduce the potential for bycatch of river herring in areas that are relatively near shore, in areas where herring are actually staging before they enter the rivers. Critical issue. And this fits in rather well, as I said, with a voluntary action taken by some captains, but voluntary actions can only get you so far. And there are other areas where this strategy should be entertained, I suspect. And that can only happen after further delving into the database, working with the sea herring area participants themselves. And by the way, I have to highlight that this particular report by Sierra Nelson and Armstrong is deficient in that you don't have the color. Without the color, these figures mean almost nothing. Unfortunately, I would encourage anyone who wants to get further insights into, you know, what these data actually, what these figures actually reveal, to get the color version. And I can supply a color version if you care to get one, because you can't see where there was zero catch and by gear type, it's all, you know, black and white, and that doesn't get you anything. Nevertheless, the conclusions are really good and the recommendations are sound. So this is a motion that makes a great deal of sense, and I fully support it.
I have a question for the maker of the amendment. What is meant by herring area participants?
I think you should read herring fishery participants. And I think that we clearly have a list of those people that qualify for the fishery. It could be accomplished quite simply by a letter and perhaps some kind of joint meeting with the PDT. We're not talking about a huge number of people here.
You mean sea herring?
Yes, sea herring.
Okay.
Atlantic herring.
This is a river herring issue with the sea herring fishery, right? So we're talking about sea herring participants.
We're talking about measures that would impact the sea herring fishery. So I think we need to, you know, bring together that group of people, sea herring.
Gene Martin.
Yeah, I think the council should get clarification on exactly what is meant here. I mean, there are obvious ways for the fishery participants to provide their input now through the advisory panel, at council meetings, at committee meetings, et cetera. If you pass this, are you looking at setting up another specific process that would set up a subcommittee, or, I mean, Mary Beth was suggesting a letter. I think this is a little vague to know exactly what direction you're intending to go here that's not already in place in the council process.
Yeah, I had the same question and concern. So I'd want clarification on that, and also wonder why it would be limited just to the sea herring industry, why we wouldn't include the river herring industry that used to exist, members of the river herring fisheries that used to exist on Martha's Vineyard and elsewhere. Maybe we should include river herring wardens. How wide do we want to open this up for participation? And also, does the existing process with the PDT, the AP, and the committee not provide ample opportunity for people to take part in the process?
Well, the current process for a PDT meeting is for them to get their work done. They don't necessarily need to take comments from the public at all. I mean, that's not really the function of those meetings. So this would create an opportunity in which they would be soliciting explicitly comments from participants in the fishery. As far as including river herring wardens, not against, you know, including other people. However, those particular people do not have the at-sea experience of the bycatch issue, which we're talking about. And I would hope that if we move forward with some kind of meeting set up like this, that you'd have, you know, captains who are on the water who are aware of the time and area in which they encounter river herring, and we could refine some useful consideration of closures that would protect river herring in some fashion, but not create huge areas that are totally closed to the fishery. I mean, if you look at the data, it's very hard to disseminate, you know, distance to shore, certain times of the year. I just think that we're not really engaging the right group of people to have the discussion with it. And as I said before, the current advisory panel has no participants at sea participants in the fishery on that panel at this time. They're representatives of the industry, such as me in the past. But I couldn't tell you where, you know, the vessels are encountering river herring.
Go to the report, which is tab 5, number 7, the report that Dr. Pierce referenced. Of course, Division of Marine Fisheries staff and members of the Council's Herring PDT put a great deal of effort into putting this report together, and It's unfortunate that, and I'm going to ask Lori if she could maybe give us a little guidance through this report. It's unfortunate that at least one, if not all, the authors aren't available to present this report to the council. I guess it was presented to the committee. Is that right? So I'm going to ask Lori to do that. And also, I'm going to ask Lori to tell the council if the original motion that came out of the committee were to pass, not the amended, but the original, what the process would be. How would you, as the head of the Herring PDT, move forward? Would you take this report and the recommendations and the areas outlined in this report and develop an alternative that then would go through the process to AP and the committee back to the council? Or does this report only scratch the surface of the different alternatives that could be created?
Well, I guess in terms of summarizing the report first, I would point you to the last committee meeting summary, which is document number 6. And I have included as an attachment to the meeting summary the presentation slides on this report. They didn't copy too well, so I apologize for that. But just in quick summary, what this report does is it takes all of the available observer data from 2005, 2006, 2007, and the port side sampling data on any trips where 2,000 pounds or more of herring was kept, and looks at bycatch ratios for river herring. There's a slide on page 4 that sort of summarizes the methodology. The data were stratified by year and area and gear and quarter. And we looked at pounds of river herring bycatch to total herring catch. And then there are a few graphs that are, of course, very hard to see that sort of summarize what the data show. On page 9 of the presentation slides, there are some conclusions. Bycatch is low by weight, but may be important and is definitely important from a river herring perspective. The estimates are highly variable. I mean, the river herring bycatch estimate with the confidence intervals, you know, some of the confidence intervals when you start stratifying the data down by gear and quarter and area and stuff, you're looking at, you know, an estimate of bycatch, give or take, 100%. You know, so there's extremely variable data, but and the coverage is limited, but it isn't as bad as, you know, we originally thought. I mean, there's enough data out there to indicate that there is a bycatch problem. There may be enough data to indicate that there are certain times and areas where the bycatch is more significant. Regarding the original motion, I have a few comments on the motion to amend as well, but regarding the original motion, the idea that we discussed a little bit at the committee meeting would be that the PDT would go back and start really slicing and dicing this data a little bit more, and looking more closely at the observer data, and the time area issues and things like that, as well as investigating some of the additional details of the observer data that weren't utilized in this particular analysis. Another thing is that this analysis includes all trips where 2,000 pounds or more of herring were kept or landed. You know, there may be a different result or a more clear result if the data is looked at for boats that are really, or for trips that are really more targeted herring trips, trips that are landing a lot more than 2,000 pounds of herring. So that was something that we had talked about potentially investigating. The PDT is a technical group, and that's kind of where my concern lies with this motion to amend. I mean, PDT meetings are open to the public. Certainly, we appreciate input from the public, from the industry, and we consider it to the extent possible during PDT meetings. But I have very limited opportunities to work with my PDT members to get the technical analytical work done that needs to be done in order to bring forward things to the group that actually makes the decisions. The idea would be that the PDT would spend some time, spend a meeting really slicing and dicing through the data and looking at the technical aspects of the analysis and the technical elements of the data, and bring forward that information to the committee with potentially some recommendations on some management measures, but that the committee would then decide, you know, what the specific management measures would be, what specific time and area closures would be considered further in the amendment based on the PDT's analysis. I'm just not clear on this motion to amend how this would actually work. I'm a little bit uncomfortable putting the plan development team into a decision-making sort of realm. Obviously an exchange of information with the industry is critical. We don't get enough industry participants at any of our meetings, committee advisors or otherwise. So I think definitely I could foresee some sort of, workshop type situation meeting with the committee, the advisors, and sending out a letter and inviting industry participants, once the PDT does the analysis and does the work, to actually have that kind of exchange of dialogue and make the decisions about what specific management measures are going to be considered relative to this issue in the amendment. I'm unclear and I'm slightly uncomfortable with putting it onto the PDT to lead that process. I think really I would prefer to see the PDT do the technical work and bring that technical work into the public process. And if that means having a river herring workshop, Amendment 4 River Herring Bycatch workshop, I think that's something that is, perfectly doable under the guidance and leadership of the committee. And through the public process, we can send out letters to the industry and vessel owners inviting them to that kind of a workshop and, have a day that's specifically dedicated to that issue. And obviously when the PDT has a meeting to look at the analysis, everybody's welcome to attend. But these issues get a little bit controversial and political, and I really would like to just see the PDT focus on the technical and analytical aspects of the work that needs to be done, and then that the rest of the process could happen through a committee if the council wants to do a workshop or something like that.
Thanks, Lori. You highlighted more concisely my concern, which was putting the PDT in the hot seat, so to speak. Although you've offered a solution, which is let the PDT take this information and other information available to it and work up a straw man, if you will, to react to this information and then have a workshop or utilize the AP and the committee to react to the initial cut that the PDT takes. Then you can have a back and a forth between the council committee and the PDT to refine alternatives. I'm uncomfortable setting the PDT up. We've taken great strides to keep the PDTs accountable to terms of reference and direction of the committee and the council. Mary Beth?
If the council is comfortable moving forward with the process that you just described and Lori described as well, then I'd be perfectly satisfied, and I would withdraw the amendment to the motion.
Does the seconder agree? Okay. Even after debate, the motion's withdrawn. Lori?
It would be helpful, and I mean, this might be something that can be done with the main motion, but if the council's intent is to have some sort of a river herring workshop, or, you know, amendment for river herring bycatch, whatever, workshop, it would be helpful to sort of express that so that we can kind of get the ball rolling and formalize that kind of a process.
Dr. Pierce, would you care to express that?
Well, I really don't think there's a need for a workshop. I don't think it needs to be as complicated as that. The plan development team has a meeting. They invite the industry to come and to participate in the discussions. The industry has indicated to me and certainly has demonstrated through their voluntary cooperation that they want to help us come up with some solutions to this bycatch problem, especially in the areas that I've already identified, Cape Cod area, southern New England, mid-Atlantic, Block Island Sound, Rhode Island Sound. So the message was to be that when they come to a plan development team meeting, they won't be sitting in their seats listening to the plan development team discuss this issue with having little opportunity to engage in the discussion. That's generally the way the plan development teams operate, and understandably so, and I support that. But in this particular case, there needs to be a good exchange at a plan development team meeting where the industry can offer up views, make some suggestions, respond to the data that's being analyzed and the recommendations that may be offered up. I mean, workshop, if the plan development team wants to have a workshop, fine enough, but I really don't think it's necessary. I think the industry working with the plan development team can come up with some good suggestions as to how we can accomplish this strategy. But in no way in the world, of course, should the industry, not just midwater trawlers, I'm talking about everybody, including bottom trawlers that direct on herring, there's no way they're going to have the say as to what's going to happen. That's going to be this council working on some recommendations provided to us by the plan development team that will be offered up to us with industry input. That's all. So I'm not going to recommend a workshop, but just a good working relationship between the plan development team and the industry that would be affected by whatever closures we come up with.
Anyone else in the council? Dave Gatham.
Yeah, I'm satisfied with what Lori just said, that she recognizes, what pitfalls are in this report, that the 2,000-pound filter may have, called out, say, bottom trawl trips, directing on other species than herring that happened to catch some herring, and they're going to look at that. You know, I don't want to see the midwater fleet get pilloried for things that occur in other fisheries. I think they have the ability to do this. I think that present it to the AP. People, fishermen who want to come and comment can comment at the advisory meeting. Then it goes through the usual process and we'll deal with it. So with that in mind, I'd like to call a question.
David, we're going to need to go to the audience before we before I call a question.
Okay, that's fine.
And I have Lori's hand up. Lori?
I just want to – what Dr. Pierce described, it is not what I'm planning on doing with the PDT. I just want to be clear with that. That's the process that would happen through a committee. I can't run a PDT meeting and allow, a huge audience to come in with an interchange between the PDT members and start arguing about the development of management alternatives. Yes, if people want to come to the PDT meeting and listen to the PDT discussion, that's fine. But I'm not going to be I'm not going to be refereeing a huge interaction between PDT members and the industry. That can happen at the committee meeting. So I'm not, in terms of like sending letters out and inviting people to the PDT meeting, that's not my plan, unless the council directs me to do that.
Go to the audience. Yes, sir.
My name is Bill McGuire. I'd just like to say that I'm in support of these time area closures for southern New England and Massachusetts, the herring runs on the Connecticut River this past year, We got a total of 4 alewives back at the reportable dams, and a total of 89 bluebacks for the whole river system. So I'd like to see a time area closure for southern New England and Cape Cod. Thank you.
Tom Osmers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Osmers. I am speaking in my official capacity as the herring warden for the town of West Tewsbury. The island of Martha's Vineyard, of course, has many different herring runs in each of the towns, the town of Aquinnah. And I further reference the prior participation at these hearings of Buddy Vanderhoop, who was unable to make this meeting today. But he did express serious concerns about the state of the river herring runs in the town of Aquinnah, which seem to be continuing in their state of decline. The 4 runs in our own town, I say we have 4 runs, but it's more like we had 4 runs. It doesn't seem as though that there's been many herring returning, even though we had hoped, and I've been making steady observations as well as trying to capture young of the year herring and bringing them to Mike Armstrong from the state to verify if, in fact, they were river herring. That so far had not succeeded to find any. I did see 1 river herring, but it had a problem. It had an osprey attached to it, and it was flying through the sky. It seems as though there may, of course, I'm not certain, there may be discrete stocks of herring that are more impacted negatively by other fisheries, including the midwater trawl vessels, as well as perhaps bottom trawl fisheries. I'm just hopeful. I wanted to say that we support this hot spot or time area closure. And, you know, like the south side runs of the vineyard, the returns have been very, very low, whereas we have still been able to maintain a couple of runs on the north side of the island area, particularly that run shared by the town of Oak Bluffs and Vineyard Haven, which seem to still maintain its health. The other runs seem to be suffering even in spite of the 3-year moratorium on the harvest of river herring. I was an active participant in the fishery with the last licensed herring seiner. It was a roe and bait fishery. His name was Franklin Benson. He passed away about 7 years ago. And there is no present commercial fishery in our town, although it had been a bait fishery prior to the moratorium. Thank you.
Laura.
Laura Slifka, Cape Cod Commercial Hook Fishermen's Association. As you can see, there are definitely other individuals besides people in the sea herring fishery who are interested in time area closures. And I don't know what you guys are going to decide on how you guys are going to make this available to the public. But whatever it is, I definitely recommend that you either include it on websites so that people know and can attend some of these meetings to have participation, especially, you know, river herring individuals who have gone out and counted herring in the runs. There's definitely a lot of people out there who are very concerned with this, and not just in New England, but also definitely down in North Carolina, Virginia. So this meeting needs to be made available to everyone. Thanks.
Anyone else? Peter Moore.
Thank you. Peter Moore, here representing American Pelagic Association and NORPEL, and some of those fishermen that Mary Beth referenced who don't come to these meetings because they're out fishing or trying to make a living doing something else. And I really wish that this entire council could have had the benefit of a presentation either by Matt Seary or Mike Armstrong. I sat through a couple of the State of Massachusetts river herring discussions in front of the Mass Marine Fisheries Commission. And, you know, no offense to the presentation of this material, but I would totally agree with what Dr. Pierce just said. You can't see anything from this data that's presented here, and there's no explanation of it for you. The takeaway message that I got at those meetings was the following. We have a problem with interaction with river herring in the midwater fishery, in the seine fishery, in the bottom otter trawl fishery, and God knows how many other fisheries. Many of them haven't even been looked at yet. Our company and the boats that fish for this company are taking this very seriously, as Dr. Pierce talked about. What I want to make sure of is that the council and the PDT is going to craft alternatives under this motion for time area closures to protect these runs, which is fine. But I hope that what Lori's talking about in that process for slicing and dicing the information that we do have, which is not complete, by the way, is taken seriously by this council and that we don't end up with huge closures. Some of the data that you may or may not have been able to look at shows that 70% of the trips didn't even have a river herring in them. 70%. 25% had less than 2%. That's a lot of fish in some people's minds. But when you hear Mike Armstrong talk about it, and I know there's some debate around this table from some of that are biologists, the amount of river herring that's being taken is insignificant relative to the population of river herring in this fishery, relative to other mortalities. Now, some of my colleagues who may not agree with me on this say, well, we should, you know, here's Peter saying we shouldn't do anything. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is, please, when it comes time to look at this kind of stuff, you've got to weigh the cost-benefit, so to speak, because this is a big deal for us. We're trying, as Dr. Pierce said, we're trying to address this on a voluntary basis, and the best information that we have is from the guys on the water. And I really hope that in the process of doing this, you really listen to them carefully and we can work collaboratively, because if we end up with a big area closure, I suppose that, you know, some people will have succeeded in what they want, but to what end? You know, even if you eliminate some of the fishermen, you're still not dealing with some of the huge mortalities that are taking place, for instance, from striped bass, from ospreys, from other things. So this is a big deal, and it's, you know, the takeaway message from these meetings was that we're part of the problem, but we're not a big part of the problem. Thank you.
Tom.
Thank you. Tom Rudolph, Cape Cod Commercial Hook Fishermen's Association. I'll try to be brief. I also attended some of those public hearings by mass and heard presentations by Dr. Armstrong, and I took away a different take-home message, which is that this is not necessarily about gear. It's about where the numbers are starting to head for the river herring take and the sea herring fishery as a whole, and I would describe it as significant myself. Furthermore, prior speaker discussed it relative to the size of the river herring stock. I believe I also heard Dr. Armstrong point out that there is no river herring stock assessment. So when they say that the take is insignificant relative to the size of the river herring stock, it's hard to say where that conclusion is coming from, since we don't really actually know how many river herring there are out there right now. I also just had one question. I definitely support the motion. I look forward to seeing some of the findings in this report by Matt and Mike, sliced and diced further by the PDT. My question is, should the council consider also, if you look on the second to last page of the report, I know these graphs have low resolution, but there definitely appears to be a cluster that the motion may overlook up around Cape Ann. And I just wonder if at this stage, if the PDT is just going to start digging further into the data, whether a consideration should be given to loop that in and see there's anything that comes out of that. Thanks very much.
Anything else? Back to the council. Mark Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly wouldn't object to a expansion of the area to the north, and I leave it to my northern colleagues if they think they need to do that. But I would point out that there seems to be some a translation problem in this motion from committee. When I originally made it and when Rod seconded it, the SNE and MA meant Southern New England and Mid-Atlantic, and that was later clarified that Southern New England included Cape Cod. And the reason for doing that is because of the large clusters of bycatch events off the coasts of New Jersey near Raritan Bay. It could be, you know, Long Island, Hudson River, River Herring. So that's what I originally was meant by that. I don't know if the whole committee remembers that or recognizes that, but the council should be aware of that. The commenter was right. There are fish off of Cape Ann and several of these, and there are river herring runs up there, and I would leave it to my Mass and New Hampshire colleagues to determine whether that needs to be addressed or not.
Frank, can you clarify?
Yeah, Mark is correct. That was Mid-Atlantic, and that's why it was clarified at the committee meeting to say including the Cape Cod area.
Dr. Pierce?
To the motion, but also to a point that Laurie made a little earlier on about what she intended to do as the Plan Development Team Chairman, and I would say fine enough. I understand her position. She is the chair, and she's got to get the work done in a timely fashion without complicating matters for the Plan Development Team. I'm anticipating that members of the industry, anybody, can make recommendations to the Plan Development Team, offer up some ideas for them to look at, and then the Plan Development Team would see if the database supports those ideas. It's all part of the process for delving deeper into the database to see what it reveals, and that might be the best way to go. And then, of course, the committee would take that information and then work on it and offer something up to the full council for its consideration. I think that makes a great deal of sense. So, this is fine as is regarding the Gulf of Maine, regarding Ipswich Bay, and some of the bycatches that have occurred up there. I don't know how to respond to that yet because we certainly have adopted some other strategies for the Gulf of Maine that have been in place for a few years now anyway, such as the midwater, such as the fixed gear, purse-seine gear only area. Small quotas that likely shut the fishery down early, so we wouldn't have that kind of fishing effort in those areas. I think maybe as a start, this is the way to go, and it should provide us some insight as to what would be the best strategy to pursue. Also, if this main motion passes, then I suspect that will set the stage for some further discussions with the Mid-Atlantic Council, and the ASMFC may actually have to initiate these, because the database does reveal that the bycatch of river herring can occur and does occur in other fisheries besides sea herring. It occurs in small mesh fisheries, and frankly, I was a bit surprised to hear some of the levels of bycatch that have been cited in some of these other fisheries, scup, squid, mackerel, and others. And that's why the Mid-Atlantic Council has to get involved in this discussion as well. And I'll highlight one other point, and that is, back in the 1960s, if you recall, there were foreign fishing windows on the edge of the continental shelf, and those foreign fishing windows were quite extensive. And for each of those windows, there were seasonal windows, and there were bycatch allowances of river herring allowed for each window and for each foreign vessel that would fish in that window. Surprisingly enough, back then in the 1960s, attention was being paid to river herring. Far more attention paid that back then than 30 or 40 years later. So the Mid-Atlantic Council in particular is going to have to pick up the cue. And I turn to Pat Augustine on this to remind him that this is extremely important to this council, certainly extremely important to ASMFC, regarding the impact of all these different fisheries on river herring as a bycatch. So this will send a good message to all the other fisheries entities, management entities.
Well, thanks, Dave, for more fully characterizing the extent of the issue we have. It's not just here in New England, Mid-Atlantic, Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, and continue to explore ways to link all the efforts together as we move forward. Anyone else on the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. Motion carries 16-0 with one abstention. Frank?
Okay. I think the next two will go a little quicker.
The next is that the council collaborate as much as possible with ASMFC and the Mid-Atlantic Council regarding the management of river herring resource. That was a committee motion. It was unanimous. After the vote, I know it's been, I believe it's already on the agenda for the next NRCC meeting. So it's a committee motion, and there's not a lot of, shouldn't be a lot of discussion.
Any discussion? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council, last chance. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous 17.
Okay, the next one. The advisors passed a motion that was very similar to this one, except, well, let me put the motion up first. If herring vessels are observed, that the coverage be distributed fairly to meet the needs of the science and management throughout the range of the fishery. It was a committee motion. There was an advisor's motion that I'm going to paraphrase here, but was very similar, except that it said equally and fairly throughout the fishery. And the committee looked at that and didn't think that equal was exactly what we needed to do, just that it was fairly and met the needs of science and management.
Committee motion does not require a second. I have a question. What is meant by distributed fairly? Does that mean that every vessel has a equal burden or equal responsibility to carry observers?
No, it was meant, if I can, if anybody else on the committee wants to jump in, but the important part was the science and management. What are your objectives? And then the fairly is that once you meet your objectives, that you're not saying that, you know, I hate to use examples, but you don't end up with the fairly was not to be equal, if I can say it better. Because equal meant that everybody had to have the same amount of observers, whether you had them on, you know, the purse seiners, the midwater boats, the Category C boats, whereby fairly it meant as long as you're meeting the objectives, you can spread them out and they don't have to be equal. Does that make sense? Some people are shaking their head yes and some are shaking their head no. So, Lori.
Yeah, this motion passed at the July 30th committee meeting, and it was really the only motion that was specific to at-sea monitoring that the committee passed. It doesn't really tell me a lot in terms of what to do to work on the development of the management alternatives, and that's what we struggled with at the last committee meeting. I would just encourage all of you to take a, I mean, just think back to what I talked about this morning in my presentation and take a look at the committee meeting summary from the last committee meeting. There's an extensive discussion of dockside monitoring and at-sea monitoring, and I really think at this point what the committee needs to get is some direction from the council on what the goals and objectives of the catch monitoring program are, what the priorities are, and how to approach the development of the alternatives for catch monitoring. I'm not really sure what, you know, what ideas may be out there, but the committee is really looking for guidance from the council on that. The more specific guidance the council can provide, the more focused the discussion at the committee meetings can be.
Right. Yeah, I think Laurie's correct on that, and I don't know if we should table this motion or one at a time, but if you turn to page 13 of the September 30th, October 1st meeting, the committee had quite a discussion on the monitoring. And in fact, we were in the process of developing a motion that had tier one, well, what the goals and objectives were or what we were trying to accomplish, and it was tier one with a 20% confidence CV, tier two which was the important but not critical species, you know, for 30%. And then it was realized when we sat down that trying to design that system would be next to impossible because you're not going to have 20 to 30% on every species. And whether it meant, you know, every single species, you know, every torpedo ray that came up or everything else. So the committee kind of came to a standstill there, and that's when Lori did say, we need better guidance from the council, and the committee agreed. And I know that several people that were there expressed interest in having a motion or thought they could move this along at the council meeting, so we decided to bring it to the council as opposed to coming up with something. And I see Terry has his hand up.
Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had the opportunity to attend last week's committee meeting, and after that discussion, which was long and difficult, I did talk with the committee members, and I've got a motion to make.
We have a motion on the board. Is this a motion to substitute?
No, I've got a motion to make that I'll hold on when it's time is appropriate.
I'll make a note and come back to you. So the motion on the board. George Darcy.
I'm not exactly sure what this means either. I mean, it doesn't sound like an alternative. It sounds more like a statement of principle. And given that the observer coverage is distributed based on statistical models developed by the Science Center to accomplish what they need to accomplish through statistical means, which I couldn't begin to describe, I'm not sure that what this does to the process. Certainly equally would have been a problem. This is so subjective that I'm not sure that it serves any purpose.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I move to table this motion.
There's a second. Seconded by Doug Grout. Non-debatable. All those in favor, please raise your hand. One opposed. Motion to table carries 16-1. Terry Stockwell.
Okay. To continue and to hopefully address some of the issues that Lori addressed. Wait just a second for Karen to catch up. And the motion is to request that the Herring PDT develop a range of alternatives for an at-sea monitoring program with a CV of 20% that focuses upon Atlantic herring, river herring, and groundfish species of concern.
Is there a second? Seconded by Mark Gibson. Discussion.
And a brief rationale for this is we struggled through looking at that list of 20 species, and there have been a number of references about the need to or potential need to have ACLs for each of them. But given the costs and the complexity of developing a monitoring program that would be sufficient to cover all of those, it was the impossible dream. So in the sidebar conversation that we had, we felt that focusing first upon Atlantic herring, which is our principal, river herring, which is a primary bycatch, and the groundfish species of concern would provide the level of monitoring that we need, and the rest of the species would fall under the umbrella of this proposal.
Does a seconder wish to add to that?
Yeah, thanks, John. When we looked at the list of species that had been identified in sea herring catches, you know, things like Atlantic torpedoes, and I can't remember some of the names of them, it quickly came to us that we weren't going to be able to develop a monitoring program that could identify all of the species that are caught in sea herring fisheries and quantify them with a sufficient level of precision. That wasn't going to be doable. I mean, there are some fish in the sea that probably haven't even been identified and classified yet. Much less trying to quantify them in an incidental herring bycatch. So we came to the conclusion that we needed to pare down that, put some sideboards on that objective. And I think this motion does that and gets it started.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a question for Lori. A lot of the discussion at the committee meeting seemed to focus around CVs from the standardized bycatch reporting methodology amendment. And am I correct in recalling that the standard used in that amendment was 20 to 30% CV? I'm really not sure at the moment.
Yes, and it's, I gotta find my document. Let's see. Excuse me one second. I don't want to get it wrong. Where is this in the document? okay, page 27 of the discussion document. The National Working Group on Bycatch said that for fishery resources, excluding protected species caught as bycatch in a fishery, the recommended precision goal is 20 to 30% for estimates of total discards, or 20 to 30% for estimates of total catch.
In light of that and the limited resources that we've talked about earlier today and our concern about how we're going to get a monitoring program in place and accomplished, I would make offer an amendment to the motion that would say with a CV of 20 to 30%, and perhaps the maker of the motion could accept that as a friendly amendment.
Does the seconder agree? Okay. So accept it as a friendly. I would have a question. Does that mean that you want it analyzed at 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25?
No, it does not.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I would prefer to keep it at 20%, and I think that would mean that we would be consistent with some of the committee discussion regarding 20 and 30. I noticed from the summary of the minutes of the meeting that it was indicated that perhaps there should be Tier 1 and Tier 2 species, Tier 1 being the most important to us and Tier 2 being of less importance. I believe Mark was the one who raised that issue. I wasn't at the meeting. I'm just referencing the minutes that are so well done, by the way. So as far as I'm concerned, this is Tier 1 stuff. For 20% makes more sense. And in light of the fact that 20% will mean higher degree of observer coverage and increased cost in the context of this particular motion, I would appreciate from the chair, or maybe someone from the audience for that matter, to elaborate a bit on a point that was made at the meeting, apparently on page 14, the summary of the September 30, October 1 meeting, where it indicates, and this is in the context of a 20% CV, coefficient of variation, that Mr. Baker, I believe this is Peter Baker, and I'm just seeking a clarification, but it's important because it relates to my longstanding concern and position that, you know, those with a stake in this fishery, a stake meaning they're concerned about this fishery, that if they're willing to assist in major ways to help us provide funds for at-sea monitoring, then we should embrace them. It says here in that paragraph, page 14, Mr. Baker stated that it is more likely that his organization and others that are focused on this issue, bycatch, can lobby for additional funding if the council first designs a monitoring program that will require additional funds. He also said that the Herring Alliance and other organizations are prepared to submit proposals for monitoring programs for this fishery and encourage the committee to consider how and when to entertain such proposals during the development of Amendment 4. So, you know, with that said, it provides me with a reason to be optimistic that there may be ways to assist this council and the National Marine Fisheries Service, for that matter, come up with the necessary monies to provide a relatively high level of observer coverage to meet our objectives, and that is what's being caught as bycatch. I'd like a clarification regarding that at some time. But again, specific to the motion, I would prefer to keep it at 20% and not 30%. By having the 20 to 30% in there, it introduces too much uncertainty and confusion. Let's say what we want, and that is a relatively high level of observer coverage that would translate into a 20%.
Mark Gibson.
Yeah, just some background. At the committee meeting, I did advance that concept of Tier 1 and Tier 2 to try to get, you know, the discussion started because we were jammed up pretty good. And I had originally thought that Tier 1 species would be those the council's directly responsible for, and Tier 2 might be those that another agency, perhaps ASMFC or Mid-Atlantic, are responsible for, or species of concern that the public has raised concerns about. I actually like this better because what we saw an example from Lori of using the SBRM methodology for a specific species, river herring, and the multiple gear types, that you come out with a series of trips necessary, or coverage levels necessary, but those would not necessarily be the same for all the different species that we're talking about, including this group here. So it seems to me that with this approach, the PDT would have the ability to sort of mix and match the coverage within this 20 to 30% window and try to get the optimum level. If some species, required so many trips, a species of groundfish, for just an example, they might be able to let that one slide to 30, reduce the amount of trips or coverage levels so that it matches up better with the coverage levels for some higher priority species. So I'm comfortable with this. I think I understand the task they're going to have to do, even though we put sideboards on it for evaluating this suite of species. They're going to need some latitude, I think, to mix and match those trips and try to balance out the coverage. I mean, we could go the way of just 20%, but I think you're going to get some coverage levels in particular fisheries that might be astounding. But
I got hands all over the place. I got Lori and then Jim.
Yeah, to those points right there, I mean, if you take a look at page 29 of the Amendment 4 discussion document, you will see how this sort of plays out in the river herring example. And this is just river herring, just for a couple of years, 2004, 2005, and this is the kind of result you're going to get. You're going to get a target number of CDAs and a target percent coverage based on a range of CVs. We did 10 to 50%. So we will probably, do this exercise for the various species. There are going to be trade-offs. My question is, what are the groundfish species of concern? If we're talking about just, the overfished groundfish species, we have such low observations of bycatch of some of these overfished, groundfish species, that you might end up with levels of coverage, up near 100% just to get a 20% CV in the herring fishery. It would be helpful to identify more specifically the groundfish species of concern, but what Mark described is essentially what we're going to have to do, and it may be, the PDT with help from the committee, because there are going to be trade-offs in terms of the level of precision you're going to get for certain bycatch estimates with the level of coverage that may be needed. So my first question regarding that was, what are the groundfish species of concern, or what does that mean? The second thing is that if a species is not on this list, it will likely still get a pretty good level of coverage just based on the sampling design that we come up with to address this list. I mean, there are a lot of species that if you go for a 20% CV to get river herring bycatch and some of the groundfish species, you're going to get a 20% or better CV on a lot of other species as well. So my first question was on the groundfish species of concern. My second question, and this might be something to come back to after this motion, but it's still I'm still a little unclear on what the specific guidance is relative to the need to estimate all catch and bycatch in this fishery. This gets at the element of observer coverage, but I think it would be helpful for the committee to hear from the council what the goals and objectives are for the measures that are going to go into this amendment to estimate total catch and bycatch in this fishery. That's something that we need to do. And also, what combination of tools are we going to use to achieve that? Where should the committee focus its work in terms of the tools that are available to estimate bycatch and catch across the fishery?
Jim.
Thank you. This is just a comment. I'm thinking ahead a little bit about after such a program is designed, if you should actually get to the point where you're implementing this sort of program, please keep in mind that the data that are collected have to be managed and audited and so forth. And all of that ideally would be done using the same techniques and quality control methods that the Observer program uses. So it's not a trivial task to manage all the data and to audit it and make it available for analysis.
Jim, you're talking about if this program ultimately uses the same Observer core that the Science Center tasks and utilizes for a wide range of at-sea observation missions, right?
Yeah, I guess there are a lot of ways it could go where if I guess it's even possible. I haven't been in on the discussions, but if they're talking about an independent program collecting data, we would just have to make sure that those data are collected in a way that can be peer-reviewed and quality-controlled. And closer to that, if it's done using NIMS observers, they would be measuring certain variables, but not all the variables that observers typically try to collect data on. So that would be another issue to discuss.
All right. George Darcy.
I think it's important to remember that you have already approved a standardized bycatch reporting methodology omnibus amendment that goes across all your FMPs. And I think Lori mentioned the importance of trying to focus on what your objectives of this program are, and I think that's correct. Identifying your objectives and your priorities for your monitoring of species. But without any new resources, if we're talking about using the existing Observer core, then this could potentially draw Observer coverage away from other fisheries. So you need to be aware of that. I mean, the SBRM process, I think 30% CV is the standard for that omnibus amendment. And there's a process for the council looking at what the actual CVs were by species, by fishery, and making some recommendations to the center as to how they allocate or reallocate the Observer coverage. So you just need to keep in mind that you've already got a procedure that this would be interacting with and the potential implications of doing that.
Well, I'm not sure that the council can't go above and beyond or in a direction that's in addition to SBRM. We're not confined to just SBRM. George.
No, I agree with that, but you will be confined by the existing resources to have Observer coverage. That's all I'm suggesting, unless there's an additional amount of coverage provided through some other means. You just have to be aware that this could impact your other fisheries and the Mid-Atlantic fisheries as well.
Sally?
Yeah, I have a question about species of concern. Did the Herring Committee intend that to be overfished and overfishing occurring, or overfished or overfishing occurring? So that's my first question. And then the second question is, in 2005, I guess, when the 2003 haddock year class started showing up and the concern about bycatch in the herring fishery was first raised, we were really worried about interactions with haddock. Now, obviously, that's neither overfished, and overfishing isn't occurring anymore, which is great, but I'm just wondering if the committee had any discussion about that. So clarification on what the Herring Committee meant as far as species of concern or to the maker of the motion, and what about the handful, I think it's four species right now, that are neither overfished nor overfishing, but the concern has been there in the past and recent interactions with haddock have been anecdotally observed. So,
guess I'll turn to Frank or Lori or any committee member. Oh, sorry, it's not Frank. Terry.
I'm not a committee member, but and I can't speak for them by any means, but much of the discussion that we had was based around a list of species that Matt Sierra provided as primary bycatch species. I don't have it in front of me, but haddock was on it. There are half a dozen groundfish species, and I don't know. Do you have that, Lori, that list of 20? Yeah, we started with there, and it was an unfinished discussion.
Jim Odlin and Dr. Pierce while Lori's looking that up.
Yeah, I'm not sure this is exactly germane to the motion, but I think it is that, you know, I heard it mentioned a little while ago by someone in the public that we were going to have to establish 19 ACLs and AMs because the heron fisheries and the heron FMP, because the heron fisheries interacts with 19 different stocks. And I think that's backwards. I think the other fisheries management plan establishes the ACL and the AM that's allowed in the heron fisheries. And I think that does lead this to be important because, for instance, in groundfish, we've established that if the bycatch is under 5% of the ground fisheries, then it's in the other category and doesn't need the ACL and the AM until we find out it goes over 5%. And the reason I bring that up is that I think we're working this backwards, and I think we ought to let the other fisheries management plan determine what is needed to cover the bycatch from that, which is consistent with how the AM's accountability measures are going to be developed. If we do it this way, we could be insisting on high level of coverage for a very small bycatch of, I don't know, pollock or, you know, you could pick a species that the AM may not be necessary or the ACL to accommodate. So I'm just trying to figure out if my interpretation of the ACLAM mechanism is right and how that ties into this. So it's a question that I'm...
George.
In my opinion, your interpretation is correct. I think the intent of the ACL is to make sure that the fishing mortality rate on a given stock is controlled and monitored and measured with accountability. It would be potentially possible for you to segment an ACL for haddock, say, and into an ACL for the herring fishery and one for the groundfish fishery. But I don't think that's necessary. So long as you take into account in your ACL, in the groundfish plan, the mortality that occurs in the herring fishery, as well as other fisheries. I mean, it needs to be accounted for and explained and quantified to the maximum extent you can. Separate from that is the requirement under National Standard 9 to reduce bycatch in the fishery to the maximum extent practicable. At least that's the way I interpret the proposed rule right now.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I read too much into the motion. I thought that groundfish species of concern would be haddock, because we have a haddock bycatch TAC for the sea herring fishery. So why not focus on that? That seems to be the only groundfish species that has generated any concern relative to bycatch in the sea herring fishery. So river herring and haddock, to me, my way of thinking, that's where the focus should be, and certainly the 20% CV, or maybe 30, but preferably 20%, that would likely enable us to zero in on other species that may be caught as a bycatch too. But it's really all about haddock. And frankly, if I'm going to be concerned about bycatch of groundfish, other species of groundfish, I might want to think about other fisheries besides the sea herring fishery. The shrimp fishery, for example, where I suspect there's still a very high bycatch of groundfish that doesn't get reported, and we're not concerned about it, but it does happen. Other smallmouth fisheries, the whiting fishery on cultivated shoals, and the regulatory discards that we create through our management measures for groundfish, that I'm sure that far exceeds any discarding that might occur, a bycatch that might occur in the sea herring fishery. So it's haddock and it's river herring. That's where the concern needs to be. Let's focus on those particular species. I'd make a motion to amend to change groundfish species of concern to haddock.
Is there a second? Mary Beth? I'm not sure, unless there's a secret database of observer information on this fishery, I'm not sure where anyone at the table is qualified to decide what is or isn't being caught in a fishery and how to compare it to any other fishery. And that's the reason we're doing this, is to establish a baseline. We don't have a baseline. We have little dribs and drabs of coverage which have occurred infrequently and not across time or area. So for anyone to say that they know what's going on, I think you should produce some information that's gone through a process that's been peer-reviewed and verified. That's why we're doing this. Let's not lose focus of that. Mary Beth?
I don't disagree with that statement. I think we do need to have information available on the fishery. But I wouldn't want us to focus a lot of attention on rare events. I mean, we need to capture, those species that are important. We need to know about them. But if we focus on rare events in the fishery, we don't really need analysis. All you need to say is we need 100% observer coverage because rare events require an extremely high level to capture them.
How do we know they're rare? We don't have any information to determine what a rare event is or not.
I think we do have some information. Is it adequate or sufficient? Probably not, but I do think it characterizes the bycatch events that occur in the fishery. We need to build on that, but I think we do have some indication. I don't know if Lori found that list of species yet, but certainly some of the things on the list would be a rare event.
Gene Martin.
I just wanted to go back to what Lori and George had said earlier about the need for this kind of measure to be developed. Is it because you don't have faith in the SBRM that you passed and provides very specific, complicated methodology for sorting out all these questions about rare bycatches versus non-rare bycatches and determines what is deemed adequate for management purposes? Is that the reason that you're not trusting that methodology? I think that needs to be reconciled if this kind of measure goes forward. And then also, to go back to what George said about shifting resources, perhaps to identify very rare events of bycatch and herring from other fisheries that are in adequate need or in woeful need of continued observation as well. Is this intended, and I think this needs to be considered if this motion passes, to be a priority that preempts other observer levels and other fisheries, that any monies necessary coming from NIMS be first spent to comply with this, or is it meant to just be in the mix with other SBRM species where you have a process for prioritizing where you want to put your dollars at the time that the needs are identified?
Maybe I have it wrong, but my understanding of SBRM is that it looks backwards to predict what's necessary to monitor the fishery forwards. And if we have dribs and drabs of coverage, well, you asked the question if we have faith in the SBRM. Yeah. And we didn't write the SBRM.
Why is
table.
This is just asking for a higher CV?
We didn't write the SBRM at this table. We passed it, yeah, but we didn't write it. And I dare say most people at this table don't understand it. So your question about
question
whether
is
we have
why
faith
a
in
higher
the SBRM
CV?
Is probably a better question.
Why a higher CV? That's all it's asking for than what the SBRM calls for, and also apparently changing a CV for species that may be rare or may not be rare in terms of bycatch. And all of that is sorted through in the SBRM. So you're asking for a different methodology for the herring fishery than what the SBRM calls for. And I'm just saying, that's fine, but there should be a rationale for that. If it's because you don't think that the existing SBRM is sufficient, then that should be vetted and justified.
Mm-hmm. 20 to 30% were the numbers that Lori gave us, right? A range of 20 to 30% to qualify bycatch or quantify bycatch and catch.
Yes, I think that the SBRM preferred alternative was 30%.
Uh-huh.
The 20 to 30% came from the National Bycatch Working Group.
Right.
I do want to clarify that this does utilize the SBRM methodology. I mean, we're basically looking backwards at the information that we have in order to project forward on the levels of coverage that we would need. We had pretty good coverage in this fishery in 2005. That was the year that the haddock bycatch issue came up, and we had close to 20% coverage in the fishery. So we used 2005 to do the exercise in the document on river herring, and it uses all of the SBRM methodologies and formulas and everything else. I think what we're talking about here is laying out priorities and designing the sampling program based around those priorities.
Dave Simpson.
Okay. First of all, with the motion, I just would be more comfortable if it said river herring species so that we don't lose sight of the fact that there are different species. Some of the analysis, some of the actual monitoring that got done initially wasn't distinguishing between alewives and bluebacks, and that's a gross oversight because we have different levels of concern for those two species. The second thing, I don't believe SPRM addressed river herring bycatch. I believe that work was only done for species that are under federally managed. They're federally managed species. So I know I was on that committee, SBRM committee, and I asked repeatedly, will this mechanism work for other species of perhaps ASMFC interest, which these river herring would be? And the answer I got back is yes. So I think what we want to do, what I saw when this motion went up was we would use the SBRM tool that was developed at great pain to those involved to do these calculations. So you go back in and you say, okay, what would be required for alewives? And you have to look back. That's all we have is data from yesterday and back. What would be required to achieve a 20 or 30% CV? My impression was also that this would be fishery-wide, all fisheries, because it doesn't make any sense to me. If you look at some of the data that was in the presentation, Matt Sieri provided the analysis he did and the group. Thank you. I lost track where I was. Bottom trawls were an important component of the overall bycatch. So it won't do us any good to get a very precise estimate of only one part of the problem. We need to look more globally at what the problem is, where our river herring are going, and what part bycatch has in our river herring problem. So that's a couple of points. And I saw Lori nod when I said I thought the committee would be using the SBRM model, so they're not rejecting it. The other question I had is, if we look at a 20% CV, you're looking at that, what the maker of the motion intended was that would be the total estimate of alewives taken in a given year in the ocean by all our fisheries. Is that correct? Right.
Terry Stockwell was the maker of the motion. He says yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Go ahead, Lori.
Lori. I wasn't really clear that we were looking across all fisheries at things like, scallop dredges and gill nets and everything else. We had focused on fisheries that catch herring. For this particular amendment, and it would be purse seine, midwater trawl, paratrawl, and bottom trawl.
Dave. But yeah, and that comes out of the SBRM, as I understand it. Scallops, they don't catch any AOIs, so they don't contribute to the variance. And then lastly, there's this importance filter that gets put in there that says, and you're not asking for CVs at the 30% level for the first quarter of the southern New England scallop fishery. You're looking at it stock-wide, ocean-wide, because there's many stocks of river herring. So you're looking at this very high level. There's all kinds of natty details in this, so I can see why the committee has struggled with it. But I think that's what we're after, is a total estimate of bycatch in all our fisheries for these species of concern. And SBRM has already done that for everything that's a federally managed species. So we really just need to go in and use that tool to do some of these other species, namely the river herrings, shad, alewife, blueback. And that's going to tell – basically, that analysis is going to tell us where our problems are, where there's a fair amount of catch that has high variance, because we really don't care if there's very little catch with a high variance. If the answer for that cell is it's 150 fish plus or minus 100 or 150 fish, we don't really care. It's when it gets into, you know, important levels, and that's that whole concept of importance filters.
Laura?
As you mentioned, David, the SBRM doesn't include river herring. If river herring is going to be a focus of this particular action or this particular exercise, I don't think that the herring PDT can take on the responsibility of designing a sampling design across all fisheries. I think we really need to focus on the gears that catch herring, which would be, I think, the four that I just named. I mean, I don't think it's really the PDT. I don't think it's the PDT's role to do that.
Yeah. Again, I think it may be because you know the fishery so well that you can come to that conclusion without doing the analysis. And I agree. That's probably where we'll end up. But I think the analysis will show us that. You have to worry about X, Y, and Z fisheries, and you don't have to worry so much about scallops or a winter fishery that occurs in the mid-Atlantic or something like that. I think that will come out of SBRM, and it will tell you how many trips in each cell you need to achieve your 30% CV. And I think the analysis will bring us right back to those three, four, or five fisheries that we intuitively know are of concern.
Doug, a long time ago, you had your hand up.
The question was already answered. Thank you.
I knew that. Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, this discussion is becoming confusing. We're getting too detailed. I'd like to keep this simple and specific to the motion and to reference the document that we have before us prepared by Laurie and company, in particular the analyses that they have done already on page 29, tables 1 and table 2, that relate to river herring. As far as I'm concerned, and until the maker of the motion tells me I'm wrong, this is about fisheries that direct on sea herring, and Lori's identified what she would look at, the gear types, you know, directing on sea herring. And I still say it should be 20%, not 20 to 30%. If it's 20 to 30, yes, it does bring us to the SBRM, and preferred is 30%. I don't want the preferred on sea herring. I want the 20%. Reason why is Table 1 and Table 2, where we see with 2005 bycatch data and 2004 bycatch data, in some cases a rather significant difference, well, a marked difference, between the percent coverage of total trips you would get with a 30% CV versus a 20%. Pier trawl, for example, in 2005, with a 30%, it's about 6% coverage versus 12% coverage at the 20% CV. And there are other numbers here, of course, that we can all look at. So I feel more comfortable with a higher level of observer coverage, that is a higher percent coverage of total trips. That means the 20%, not a 30%. This motion, as it's worded now, is too confusing for me. I can't relate now to these particular tables that Laurie has offered up. I amended it to make it haddock, not groundfish species of concern. I can't recall how we got from 20% to 20 to 30%, but anyways, 20% is what I'm eventually going to favor, not this particular range.
So you'll be voting against this. Anyone else on the council before I go to the audience? Dave Gatel.
Yeah, I actually had a number of points. First of all, the CVs is listed here. People are tossing these numbers around. I'm not sure they understand them. This could lead to very high levels of coverage to get these CVs. I want to make sure people understand we're not talking 20 to 30% levels of coverage here. We're talking about coefficient of variance. It's a very different beast. You know, the devil's always in the detail. Second point was that they amended it to Haddock. I'm not sure Haddock's the only one that should be there, but if you get the Haddock in the observing data, you'll get the other species as well, because they're all going to be together, the cod, the pollock, everything else. I do think we need to discuss the list in the document on page 30, because that's actually the list that's going to get you the answers to the question. It's not this motion. You know, for example, the requirement to bring closed cod end on board wherever possible and open it on board for the observer to inspect. You know, most of the stuff you want to look at is in the part that never comes on the boat. So we've got to have a discussion about that. It's far more important than this to me. I mean, this may be important to some people, but it's not going to get you the answers to the question that you're seeking in this motion. So I think we ought to focus more attention on that list. And the last thing I want to remind people is we still haven't specified it here. It's all around the table. Some people are saying it's every fishery that catches herring. If it's every fishery that catches herring, then it's A, B, C, and D permits. It's gill nets. It's hooks. It's, you know, large mesh gear catches herring. Don't fool yourself. And as such, it catches river herring and everything else in some small quantity. And to get that level of coverage, to get that level in something like, I don't know, let's just pick large mesh otter trawls. You may have to observe an absolutely enormous number of trips. And so I think we ought to narrow this down a lot further and say perhaps category A and B boats. You seem to be interested in the dedicated herring fleet. That's a subsection of the rest of this. And you know, if you want to make this manageable and you want to get something that's useful and you don't want to just, you know, send observers out all over the planet that you don't have and can't afford to get you information that's going to be virtually useless. You know, I'm just not sure that people understand exactly where it is that we're going here. I would like to see the PDT narrow this down. I mean, I'm willing to vote for this motion to get it moving, and then I'd like to see what they come back with. But I think that they need to narrow this down to a very specific list. We're going to look at Category A and B boats or Category C boats that have a documented landings of more than 10,000 pounds of herring, something like that. We're going to take this list on page 30, and we're going to say these are options. These are the ways we're going to accomplish this, because until you deal with this list of options, you haven't done anything. You're never going to get the answers to the question. And I am actually supportive of the fact that we've taken a lot of species out of here because they make the list on page 30 more manageable then. If you tell a boat that's got 1 million pounds of dogfish in the net, I got to put those fish on board so that we can just sit there and spend 3 or 4 days dealing with the mess we created. You know, you're not going to get a high level of compliance. They'll probably just drive off and rip the net apart or something. So we've taken dogfish out of the equation, which means it should at least be doable to put the gear aboard. I mean, again, I'll go back to some of the smaller boats here. You know, you have a set of 10,000 pounds of dogfish, and you can't get them to split, and you can't figure out how to get them in the boat, and then you say, oh, but we got to count all these. You can't do it. So you have to decide what it is you can do, what it is you can't do, and what it is that you really need the information on and what you want to do. And you know, I think we've come a long ways with this motion, and I think we can send this to the PDT and let them wrestle with it a little bit, and maybe they come back at the next meeting through the Herring Committee and say, okay, we need even further clarification. Here's the list of problems we've identified based on what we got right now that might make this undoable, and how badly do you want to do this? I just... I really want people to think, we haven't discussed this list yet, and I really think that's what you've got to focus on. So I'll let it go at that. I'm willing to vote for this, and I'm willing to move it to the next step, but I've got grave reservations with some of the numbers that are up there right now as to whether they're still doable.
Sally McGee.
Maybe I missed something, but I need clarification on the end of this motion where the list of species that is going to be the focus. I had raised the issue of haddock when we were talking about species of concern, since it used to be, but is no longer considered a groundfish species of concern. And I think Lori was going to go back and look at the list that the committee was considering, but we didn't get that clarified. So I just need clarification because it doesn't, I don't think that that is what the intent is of the discussion that we've had so far, unless I missed something.
I've got a list. I don't have it electronically, so I can't put it on the screen. I apologize. It's something that was presented at the committee meeting, and it was percentages and ranking of sampled bycatch between the combined observer information and the port side bycatch sampling information. It's not that presentation. And in terms of the groundfish, this is basically a ranking of all of the species that were either seen through the observer data or the port side sampling data on various herring trips from 2005 to 2007. River herring was the first ranking, and spiny dogfish was the second. Silver hake, whiting was the third. Squid, haddock, shad, other fish, red hake, redfish, white hake, butterfish, lumpfish, striped bass, scup, pollock, lobster, torpedo, and bluefish. So for the groundfish species, the list had observed, or the rankings, the observers had documented whiting, haddock, red hake, redfish, white hake, pollock. That's it.
So all of those would be included in what is considered the herring species of concern, rather than what is previously we've discussed as the groundfish species of concern. Is that correct? So this is the list that was intended in the original motion?
I'm sorry, there's the list.
Terry?
I intend for the groundfish species on this list to be included.
However, now we have a motion that limits it to haddock, I think, right? The motion's been amended to just focus solely on haddock in the groundfish complex. Dave Simpson.
I guess I'll just repeat what I said before. SBRM has already done this for us for every species that's federally managed. And I'm not sure why, across the whole fishery, across the ocean, we already know, my understanding is we already know how many trips would be required in each fishery as it was stratified out. The sampling strategy is already known to achieve a 30% CV across all fisheries for haddock and every other species that was listed that's a federally managed one. So why would we be concerned about one particular fishery and what their CV is? We already have a sense of what the overall CV is on the estimate of bycatch. We can determine from that, is that an issue or not for that species? Is the estimate of bycatch for haddock adequate to do the assessment to calculate what the fishing mortality rate is? Are we above some target or not? That's already done for all those species. What hasn't been done for yet is species that are not federally managed, and our focus here seems to be on those river herring species. So we need to apply the SBRM rules to use that tool to assess the amount of sea sampling coverage that's required throughout all fisheries. Because if you look at, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm looking at Matt's presentation, figure 10, the bottom trawl fishery, is that a targeted river sea herring fishery, or is that a small mesh fishery or involving a number of different target species?
It's a small mesh fishery. It's trips. It's not even a fishery. It's trips. It's trips that use bottom trawls that caught more than 2,000 pounds of herring.
Okay. The 2,000 pounds was that used to identify a targeted sea herring trip? Is that why that was used?
In this particular analysis, yes. Although I think it's questionable whether or not all of those were targeted sea herring trips.
Right. And being concerned about the river herring assessments maybe this becomes a commission issue, but it's still a problem for the council because these are fisheries that the council manages. Again, I would say I think we need to look more globally. We need to do this for all fisheries so that we can figure out where the problems are based on sea sampling. Where are the river herring going? Where is the bycatch occurring? So that we can determine in a relative way, is the herring fishery really the problem, or is it the whiting fishery or something else? Or are they, you know, is it 20-20-20? You know, is it several different problems? We don't know that if we just narrowly look at the directed sea herring fishery. So I think we're starting out looking too narrow. We have to look broader, figure out the targeted sea herring fishery is a particular problem, and then the sea herring plan can address that.
Is the Atlantic states who manage river herring, are they doing this, Vince, or is this on the docket for something to be looked at?
Well, yeah, we're trying to look at all sources of mortality for river herring, but we're 4 years out from a stock assessment. We're looking at trying to take action prior to that, but I think the other dilemma is that bycatch and fisheries not regulated by the commission or impacts commission species, but the commission has limited options how to respond to that.
Terry.
Yep. I certainly understand Dave Simpson's angst here, and it's, you know, Dr. Pierce, you know, well put it earlier. I mean, it's a small mesh fishery issue, bycatch issue, and one of the previous motions that was passed by the council here was better coordination of the commission, the two councils. And I think, you know, should we be able to move ahead with that, we can address a number of the issues that Dave has just raised.
Jim Weinberg.
Yeah, I think that although I don't claim to really understand the SBRM, I have a fairly good understanding of how it works. And the results that you get out of it are dependent on the data that you put into it, of course. And the SBRM, when it was run, I think it used data from 2004. And it will be updated this coming year with more recent data. But every time it's updated, using new data, it will give you new numbers. So it's very important that if a particular PDT is working on their stock of concern and trying to do an SBRM type analysis, that they coordinate that with the global SBRM analysis that the center is doing, because it depends on what data you're using and also what species you put into the analysis. Because the way it works, it's looking when a fishing boat goes out, it's looking at the data and estimating the probability that that type of vessel will catch species A, B, C, D, E, F. And then it figures out, you know, how to allocate observers across all of the fisheries so that you achieve the 30% CV. So the danger here is that you might do an analysis using the SBRM methodology, but not use the same data or the same species in your smaller analysis and come up with different numbers. So
what you're proposing is very good for basically pinpointing where the differences lie between, you know, how much observer coverage there is and how much you really need. But it isn't necessarily going to give you the same answer that the global SBRM analysis has given you. And for that reason, I think you have to be clear about what you expect to get out of it. And when the answer does come out, assuming you do the analysis, it gets back to Gene Martin's question. Is this result that you found a priority that the council wants to use to basically modify what the global SBRM is telling you? So those are questions that ultimately would have to be faced for every stock.
Anyone else in the council before I go to the audience? Dr. Pierce.
Well, Lori went through the list of species that we couldn't see, but she read it. And the only species on that list that I would like to pay attention to in a meaningful way is river herring and haddock. I mean, she mentioned squid and silver hake and other fish and red hake and redfish. I mean, those are low on the pole, and there's no reason whatsoever for us to suspect that there's a problem with bycatch of those other species in a fishery for herring, notably the focus of attention right now, the midwater trawl fleet and the purse seine fleet. So that's to some extent. So I'm very comfortable with this focus on river herring and on haddock. You know, let's move this forward with the 20% CV, not 30%, but I can't tinker with a motion now. It gets too complex. Let's get out of the forest here and act. It's almost 1 o'clock, and don't we have about 6 more hours worth of discussion on sea herring? I turn to you, Mr. Chairman, to ask you how we're going to get through sea herring today. I'm a bit confused now as to how the agenda is going to flow. But anyways, I would love to dispose of this motion and then get to the other point that was raised by David. A lot of Davids around this table today. And that would be the other measures we have to consider that came forward to the committee from the Northeast Fishery Science Center, the sea sampling branch. In order for this to work, we have to do other things, and those are the bullets on page 30. So let's please dispose of this motion as soon as we can.
We'll turn to the audience. Peter?
Thank you. I'm Peter Baker. I work for the Pew Environment Group, and I direct the Herring Alliance. I just had some comments. Dr. Pierce, thanks for mentioning me earlier. I appreciate that. I think Dr. Pierce is right. You should be looking for a CV of 20%. You could provide all of us with a lot more confidence in the numbers and the results. Secondly, I think to Dave Gaethel's question, this monitoring program should be really focused on A and B permitted vessels and really figure out a way to monitor the bulk of the landings and the bycatch and not get bogged down on the smaller players in the fishery. Third, Mary Batuli spoke about rare events. A rare event on a small boat may mean a few fish. A rare event on a pair trawl may mean tens of thousands of pounds of fish. That's why they're important, and that's why you have to be able to assess rare events in this fishery probably more than any other fishery in the region, because it's the biggest volume fishery, and when you make a mistake, they're big mistakes, potentially. Fourth, the Observer Program reports that almost 17% of the tows that they observe on midwater trawl trips are dumped, which means they never see the fish. The fish don't come on board for sampling. They never make it to shoreside. So you have a huge amount of fish that never gets seen by an observer, even when there's an observer on board. Secondly, these are pump fisheries, and they use what's called a seal guard. So they have a hose that goes into the net, and it's got bars across it, so that nothing bigger than about this ever comes on board. So when you have an observer on board, they don't get to see anything bigger than this. They don't get to see porpoises. They don't get to see seals. They don't get to see whales. Matt Sieri testified that they don't get to see whale cod. There's a whole range of fish that these boats interact with that the observers never see, and I think you really need to address that in this program. And to Dr. Pierce's question about funding and groups like the Pew Environment Group or other foundations, most of you know that we've supported work of various organizations in the region, including the Hook Fishermen's Association and others, and through those collaborations, when I worked, most of you also know I used to work for the Hook Fishermen's Association and was director of the Choir Coalition. When we were involved with that, the Hook Fishermen offered to Norpel to put it at their expense electronic monitoring equipment to look at what they were catching and to try and develop a system so it could be put into management. After 6 months, they said, no, we won't do that. And they told the fishermen that had put them on board that they would no longer be able to offload at Norpel. Secondly, the Choir Coalition went in 2005 to Congress and asked for $1.5 million to fund the observer program for herring. We had sponsors for it. Norpel hired a federal lobbyist named Rick Marks to lobby against it, and unfortunately they prevailed. Third, the hook fishermen have gotten through the Mass State Legislature $750,000 to set up a shoreside monitoring program so the DMF can do some of this important shoreside work. So when people say, when are they going to put their money where their mouth is? We do, and we've been doing it, and we're prepared to keep doing it. But to ask us to fund observers while you allow dumping at sea is just a non-starter. So we're happy to try and find funds to make these programs work, to bring experts in that can help you develop the programs that you want to develop, and we want to be part of the process. Thanks.
Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Owen Rochford, plant manager at Norpel. We've been involved in the herring midwater fishery since 2003, and there seems to be a witch hunt here for midwater herring boats in that they're catching all river herring. I would like to offer a suggestion where you may look for the culprits. In the late 90s, they closed squid fisheries and ground fish limits so that fishermen had to modify their fishing habits. Where normally they go offshore, they're restricted to day fishing, where they have to fish more inshore with small nets, like for squid and whiting, for example, so they can get a lot more incidents of river herring catches, where they're picking the fish at sea and have to discard what they don't need. That's one area where they can look in. I was basically accused of catching and our midwater boats were accused of catching all the river herring since 2000 to show a massive decline in the Connecticut rivers. And the incidents we've seen of river herring are actually very, very small. I'm not saying we've never seen one. Certainly we have. But you show me any commercial fishery and there will always be slight incidences of bycatch, some more so than others. We've always paid particular attention to how our fishermen are fishing and tried to keep them and educate them to ways to avoid any other bycatch, for example, like haddock, river herring, cod. When we discover there's a hot area, we basically, among the fleet, tell other guys, look, we can't go there. There is a possibility we might catch some of these species, and we avoid it. We've cost the company thousands of dollars keeping our boats tied up without going to George's because we thought there was a possibility of getting haddock there. And from speaking to ground fishermen, they explained to me, as the season wears off, if we fish deeper, the haddock come shallower. And that was what we adopted so that we would get less haddock incidences. And we also told other midwater fishermen how to do this, yet we get no credit for it. And I would like to take the council's time to understand that we're always working to keep the fishery as clean as possible. When you're talking about observer coverage, 20 to 30%, on pair trawlers, you want it on both boats, which is fine. But that actually gives you 40 to 60% coverage because we can't afford to send two boats out to sea fishing. Put the fish on one boat, like some of our opponents go on with, and have observers on one boat and the other boat do all the fishing. Fish has to go on both boats. Because of the price of fuel and the cost of putting these boats to sea, we can't afford to go out and not attempt to fill both boats when we do go. Because of the closure of Area 1A to midwater boats, when the herring are prevalent there, we can't fish there. So that takes us out of a good herring fishery for 4 months of the year. Then you're down to George's Banks, is the other area where the herring show up that time of the year. We can't go fishing there in case of catching bycatch in the height of the summer. this time of the year, we can go out and attempt to go deeper, like our groundfish colleagues told us we could do. And we do get a slight instance of haddock catch, not a significant amount, yet there is a cap limit for us on haddock. And as soon as that is hit, if it's hit, we will be shut out of it. So if we're to continue as a commercial fishing entity, we really have to look at the observer coverage and see what we can do to keep the bycatch to a minimum. Peter Moore had a suggestion to go to trip limits or to go to sector allocations. Now, as a commercial fisherman in the past, I think sector allocations are a bad idea. But if you look outside the box and look at individual accountability on boats, I think it's a very good idea, particularly towards bycatch limits. So each individual boat has to watch his bycatch, and it brings in individual accountability, which I think is good. So overall, I think if you look at sector allocations, it could actually be a very good thing from that point of view, not from divvying up the pie, but from individual accountability point of view. Thank you for your time.
Tom?
Thank you, Tom Rudolph, Cape Cod Commercial Hook Fishermen's Association. It's a lot of work, and thanks for taking it on. I think the committee came to you guys today for high-altitude guidance, and I don't know, I think you might have started out at 5,000 feet, but I think you ended up at 500, and you might be heading towards landing safely, but at the wrong airport. I think, for instance, the motion up there, I know it's difficult, but it's both too narrow and too broad. For instance, it focuses on at-sea monitoring. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the committee came for guidance on the overall monitoring goals and objectives of Amendment 4 today. So I think, you should talk about general monitoring and, leave the at-sea versus shoreside decisions for a little later. I say too narrow because the list of species is changing quickly, but it's not enough. There are other ASMFC-managed species that could potentially be a problem in the future. There's a letter from a Chatham ground fisherman on the table today that talks about a potential striped bass incident in the vicinity of Closed Area 1 in the last couple of days, and we know that striped bass incidents have happened in the past in the herring fishery. There were significant reports of some scup incidents in the winter fishery a couple of years ago. We know that bluefin tuna have been caught in the fishery. And furthermore, you're talking later on today, presumably, I think, about the complex interplay with the mackerel fishery. Where's mackerel on this list? Not to mention protected species. I think that if you can go back up higher, I think that you'll find there's a lot of sentiment even at this table for the high numbers that Dave Gaethel referenced earlier. I think they may be coming, and I think they should be included in the range of alternatives. If the council sends a signal that it wants higher levels, it'll be a lot easier to get the money. As far as the SBRM, reliance on the SBRM or SBRM techniques, I also agree very much that because it looks back at past data to spit out those projections, they can't be relied upon because of some of the flaws in the past data, especially at sea dumping and the use of pre-sorting in some of that fish that is dumped. Another problem with SBRM is that the numbers it spits out after the filtering process, I believe, are subject to a pretty subjective prioritization process. So if nothing else, if the council sends a signal that it wants more of the SBRM, it sends a signal that when that prioritization process happens that this fishery can't be backed down on. A lot of the things you warn against, that this will take resources from other fisheries, they all exist now. The money that funds the observers in the herring fishery now, I believe, is groundfish money that Congress sent to monitor the groundfish fisheries. So resource reallocation between fisheries is already happening. I just have a few more brief points, and then I will step aside. One other point about potential pitfalls of relying on the SBRM, and I think this probably needs a little bit more looking into, but the projections based on SBRM techniques for river herring using a look back at the 2005 fishery, the one that had real high observer coverage, there happened to be a lot of observers in the herring fishery that year, I think that said that you would get you could potentially get a 20% CV from a level in the neighborhood of 25%. But Mazzieri's analysis said when we look back at 2005, when we did have 25% coverage, the river herring number actually came out with a CV of 60%. And I think that needs to be teased out further, but it is definitely something to watch out for. The last thing I want to say is that in advising you guys to please consider going back up higher to 30,000 feet, the choir coalition, of which the Hook Fishermen's Association is a member, submitted a straw man for overall monitoring goals and objectives for the amendment. And I would urge you all to please take a look at that and give strong consideration to adopting it or something close to it as a framework for monitoring goals and objectives for the amendment. Thank you very much.
Roger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Roger Fleming, Earth Justice, on behalf of the Herring Alliance. I just wanted to emphasize a couple of points that have largely already been made. Our concern with this motion as it's drafted, as was just stated, is that the species list is probably too narrow. I just want to remind you, as somebody already has, of the Magnuson requirements, which are to assess the amount and type of bycatch occurring in the fishery, not just two or three of the species that are occurring in the fishery, and then to take actions to minimize bycatch occurring in the fishery. I think that part of what the SBRM discussion points out is that the data that has been reviewed, that is being looked back to, is inadequate for spitting out the right coverage levels at this point in time. I think a better approach would be to spend, maybe it's just for a limited number of years, but to spend some time, a few years, through a combination of at-sea monitoring and dockside monitoring to provide 100% observer coverage so you can establish the baseline that you need going forward to appropriately characterize the bycatch occurring in the fishery. Thank you.
Anyone else? Laura?
Laura Slifka, Cape Cod Commercial Hook Fishermen's Association. I just want to emphasize the point that Tom and Roger just made regarding baseline data. If you look back at the table 1 and 2, the sample approach to determine appropriate levels of observer coverage based on 2005 bycatch data for river herring, and then also looking at the 2004, at a 20% CV under paratrawl, you come out with 20% coverage for 2005. And then in 2004, you come out a 20% CV is 3% coverage. So going back and using the data that we currently have in the system is not going to give you the right level of observer coverage. We really need to look at collecting baseline data. I agree with Roger. Cape Cod Commercial Hook Fishermen's Association has always supported increasing monitoring, 100% monitoring. It might be what we need to collect every little rare event that happens. As well, we also have to look at dumping. I mean, with this going on, you're never going to know what's actually being caught. So, thanks.
Back to the council. Anything further from the council? Sally McGee?
Just before we vote, if we could just make sure everybody's clear on what the underlying motion is, I think it might be helpful just to scroll back so we know what the amended motion and the underlying motion are by way of comparison before the vote happens.
The difference is groundfish species of concern in the main motion, and the amended motion is simply haddock. Anything further from the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Ten opposed. Six opposed. Abstentions. One abstention. The motion to amend carries 10-6. One abstention. Now the main motion. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I'd move to amend by striking the 30%.
Is there a second? Second by Jim Odlin. Any further discussion? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Nine opposed. Eight abstentions. Motion carries 9-8. It's now the main motion again. Anything further? Mary Beth.
I have significant concerns about taking that 30% out. That was quite a close vote by the council, and it seems that we're moving away from a science-based approach. We have the standardized bycatch reporting methodology. This council has already moved that through the process and approved it, and now we're saying that best available science is not what we're going to use. So we have options. You have best available science, or you have political science, and it appears we're using political science.
Doug Grout.
Yes, I was hoping that the 30% would stay in so we'd have a balance, a minimum, and then what the SBRM. I'd like to have both of them back in, so I'll vote against this.
Dr. Pierce.
Well, we should all appreciate the fact that there are many individuals who would like 100% observer coverage, which is far greater than a 20% CV. And 1% CV, we haven't even got to that aspect of the discussion. We've settled with 20% as it stands. And 20% is still a high level of coverage that actually could translate into a higher percent coverage of total numbers of trips when more recent information is used in the analyses. We haven't got that information in our hands yet, so we don't know what it's going to show. I appreciate the perspective of those who like 30%, but again, in light of all of the controversy, in light of everything we received through scoping comments, testimony, we have to have as high a level of observer coverage as we can possibly get, and that at this point in time pertains to 20%.
Anything further? Ready for the question? This is the main motion as amended. All those in favor, raise your hand. Thirteen opposed. Three abstentions. One abstention. The motion carries 13-3 with one abstention. Frank?
Okay, we have one last motion from the committee, which is number 6. To approve the Amendment 4 draft decision document as modified by the committee, 930.10.1, for further development into the management alternatives for inclusion in the draft EIS. Excuse me. By approving that, the document that you have in front of you, like the options on page 30, they stay in. So it's approving what the committee has done so far, letting us go forward.
Discussion? Dr. Pierce.
I recognize we're out of time, and perhaps many of the questions raised by the committee relative to further guidance this council should provide them will not be answered here today. Yeah, so be it. If this passes, then I would assume that would mean that the committee would still work on, well, I'll be specific, would still work on the bullets that are on page 30 of the discussion document, possible measures to consider. These are the ones that were highlighted by David Gethel a little while ago. So those are really important points, and I assume the committee will spend more time on that.
Okay. Rip coming up.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, ask Frank a question. Shouldn't that include the modifications made today as well?
Yes.
So you would need just today's
as
data.
Okay. Thank you, Rip. Anything further from the council? Dave Gethel?
Just a more or less a question. That all we're doing, if we approve this, is saying that anything that's here at the moment is just an option. We're not endorsing any of the options. We're not. Are we narrowing our range any? I mean, I'm not sure what this amendment or this motion covers, other than just moving this document as it exists forward.
Well, I believe the committee's looking for acknowledgement that the council's looked over this draft document, and we've made changes today through our motions as a council, and that we're asking them to go back and to continue to work on this document and anything that's contained within it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with moving the document forward. I have a lot of questions about individual aspects of options in this document that could probably take the rest of the afternoon. I got a lot of notes here, but I don't think that's where we need to go right now. I think we're better off to have these options refined some more and hopefully have some of these lists shortened and clarified by the committee and then do that. So I'm prepared to vote for this and move it forward, but I just want to make sure I'm not closing off any options in the future here at this time. I mean, in other words, if we haven't added something to this document today, does that mean we can't add anything from here on in if we don't like any of the options that are there? That's what I'm trying to get to.
No, doesn't mean that. Doug.
Yeah, I had some similar concerns. At what point would the committee like some suggestions for other options in dealing with this? Would you like this addressed here at the full committee or the full council, or could we talk to, say, some of our other state members about trying to get those options through the actual committee level?
Is that a request to be on the hearing committee?
That was one of my top priorities.
I know.
That I gave you, but.
Yeah, okay. Lori?
This is a living document that will continue to change and evolve as we go through the development of the alternatives. Approving it today just means signing off on the committee's work thus far in concept. And, I mean, the intent was definitely if there were things that were not in this document today to get them in. One of the things that we added was the river herring stuff. The river herring measures will be taking out the sector group or quota allocation measures. So this document will change, you know, tomorrow. And will continue to change. Nothing is off the table until the council finally does ultimately approve the alternatives for development into the draft EIS, which, again, is very optimistically April, highly unlikely, given the discussion today and the fact that we still don't really have any overall goals and objectives for the catch monitoring program. So we're going to have to continue to wrestle with that. I would anticipate at this point that we'll probably need to go through a very similar morning, like, or in very similar time like we just had this morning at the February council meeting, to sort of go over again where we are with the development of these measures and get some additional guidance and decision made from the committee. So I would, my guess would be that we'll have some committee and advisor and PDT meetings to start working on everything we've talked about today and probably try to come back to the council at the February council meeting with another update and another opportunity to get whatever clarifications and guidance we need and go from there.
Lori, when's your next meeting, or Frank?
We haven't scheduled a meeting yet. My plan is to have probably a PDT conference call in the immediate future to talk about analysis to be done, then have a PDT meeting, then have an advisors meeting, then have a committee meeting. So the committee will probably meet in December before the holidays.
I would just say I think the committee could come to the council with a straw man for goals and objectives for monitoring both at sea and shoreside. We didn't have a chance to get to it today, and we do have a loaded down agenda. So unless there's objection, I would ask that the committee come back to the council with a straw man, and we can add or subtract. You can look at it then.
It's probably going to be the February council meeting, and I think at that point, hopefully, we can also have a meeting on the river herring stuff by then and have some more specific information on the river herring measures as well.
Okay. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I'm not going to make a motion to modify what we have in front of us now. However, there are a couple of alternatives in this document that I don't like, and I want them struck out eventually. But I'll be a little bit sensitive to the Mid-Atlantic Council, in particular on Mid-Atlantic Council sensitive, as you know, Pat. Specifically, this relates to the issue raised by Lori in her presentation this morning about the mackerel fishery and the fact that we now have a couple of alternatives in this document on page 38 and 39 that raise it up to 25 metric tons as a possession limit, and the point was raised that that's a directed fishery. I'll be open-minded on it, even though I really am not, I suppose. I would encourage the Mid-Atlantic Council in particular to focus on those two alternatives to see if indeed there are alternatives that council would strongly support. As it stands right now, I think it's unwise for us to support them. But in the interest of time, I won't make any motion to modify this document. I'll just support it as is. It's a living document, and we'll return to this issue, I'm sure.
Lori?
One more thing. Like I said, I'm probably going to get the PDT working pretty quickly through a conference call and then probably a PDT meeting in mid-November. I would anticipate a committee meeting in early to mid-December to review the PDT work and maybe even have an advisors meeting before that. I don't know yet. There aren't that many weeks left in this part of the year. At some point we're going to need to get whatever proposals are out there from the industry and other stakeholder groups. So I would just put out there now that if we plan a early to mid-December committee meeting, that we reserve some time on that committee meeting to accept proposals from stakeholder groups regarding the catch monitoring program. I know Choir submitted something today. We didn't even really get to it. So I would just put it out there for everybody that I would hope we could get those in December so that we can sort through them and bring whatever we need to back to the council in February.
I think that's a fantastic idea, Lori. Why don't you utilize that list of interested parties you have to communicate that desire to receive those suggestions or proposals. Thank you. Still have a motion on the board to vote on. Anything further on the motion on the board? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Seventeen. Unanimous. Frank, anything else?
That's
okay. It's 10 after, so let's start up at 2:15. Brief little discussion.